listening to the joyous conclusion to the Brahms Violin Concerto that you can hear live this Saturday evening beginning at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall as the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra wraps up its season-long journey. We've been listening this morning to selections from your last concert with music from the Americas. Now, why are we ending here? Are we there yet? Is that it?
Where yet? No, well, we're back in Germany. Can I say back in Germany? I guess it's all started there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it's about classical music. And I'm happy that we have a chance to do a classical concert on Saturday and the casual classics on Sunday, and both concerts are about Brahms, because there's so much. There's so much with Brahms and about Brahms. And
how do you even pick three of all of his works?
I don't know. Yeah. I was just trying to create two programs that fit the bill. And I think that doing this wonderful violin concerto with young soloist Nicky Choi is a real treat. And it's a great ending to the big classical concerts with Symphony No. 3 in the first half of the concert. And then on Sunday afternoon, the serenade that I admire so much, Serenade No. 1, which is a very rare treat because it really is a symphony, but it's for 10 players, and we can talk more about that. But what I wanted to do with this concert is to have our audience come on stage. So this casual classics is happening on the stage of the VBC. You know, you never or almost never get to experience that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I want our audience to feel the pressure when you step in the limelight and you actually look out and you see the auditorium with all the seats there, and then you realize, oh my, now I'm going to have to play something here, let's say a Brahms serenade. So we're starting with that experience or that feeling, and then we're going to do the usual casual classics treat, which is we're going to stop and we're going to rehearse, and audience members get to just switch seats in between movements, so
okay.
You get a different perspective. You hear the orchestra from a different angle. You can sit closer to the oboist or farther away.
I would sit far away from the French horn players.
Oh, it's such a great French horn part in that serenade, though.
Yeah, but there's the spit there.
Well, the spit is always there, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on stage that you don't even think about. Well, my experience being on stage is you can't see the audience. You're not aware of what's out there in the orchestra, in the house, because you're so focused of what's going on stage. How aware are you of what's going on in the audience when you're performing?
I mean, somewhat you get a feel of the audience even if you can't make out the faces there. I mean, you see some of the faces actually the first few rows, but what I'm going to try to show our audience is also how the lights are completely different.
Mm.
I mean, the lights are on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not something that
hot,
people
yes.
are used to. They are hot, and also they blind you. So
mm-hmm.
you don't, even if there are people sitting there, you don't see them necessarily because the lights are right in your eyes.
Well, that's coming up on Sunday. On Saturday, we'll hear this wonderful violin concerto with Nicky Choi. The name is familiar to us who follow Twickenham Fest. He's been here before.
Yes, and he's also has a sibling who is a wonderful musician. So I'm really looking forward to playing. I mean, Brahms Violin Concerto. What can I say about that?
It's really long.
Come on! Oh, be positive. Is this the leftover of the fun drive? What's happening here? You've got really really happy stuff behind you on the wall. So just be happy. No, it's not long. It's just the right length. And of course, it's the slow movement. Famous slow movement starts with the long oboe solo, which
right.
was not to the liking of
Pablo
the violinist.
Sarasate. Hated it. In fact, I found this quote in the liner notes. He says, Pablo Sarasate complained with a virtuoso's understandable narcissism that it's good music as such, but do you think that I'm so tasteless as to stand up there on the podium with a violin in my hand and listen to the oboe and the adagio playing in the audience the only melody in the entire work?
well, okay, all right. Yeah, not the only melody, but I get it. I mean, mm-hmm. Back in the days, a concerto meant that, of course, the melody immediately appeared in the solo instrument, in this case the violin, but Brahms was a chamber music and symphony composer, so everything he writes is either a gigantic chamber music piece, like Symphony No. 3 is full of details where you go like, oh yeah, I mean, I really want to work on this for like 3 weeks because, you know, back in the good old days at the Academy of Music, we would be working on these chamber music pieces like the Brahms Clarinet Quintet, in my case, for weeks and for months. And then you get to work on every little detail. And the music is written in a way that just inspires you so much. There's so many details. Ultimately, I mean, it sounds like a symphony, but the details really come across as a chamber music piece. But Brahms was a composer, not a concerto composer. So of course, mm-hmm.
he had a lot of uncertainties.
Well, he had an idea of hearing the voice of the oboe to start the slow movement with. So he did, and he mm-hmm. didn't care much about what Sarasate had to say about it.
Well, he didn't write it for him anyway. He wrote it for Joachim,
exactly,
who was instrumental. Bad pun. Sorry, he was key in developing this piece.
Instrumental. Okay, sorry, I didn't have enough coffee this morning. So your punch, you know, the punchlines are slowly dawning on me here in the morning. Anyways, Brahms, you know, one of the great peaks, one of the great mountains you have to climb over and over when you do a Brahms symphony. And there's always, as I said, a lot of new things to discover, old things to rediscover for yourself as a conductor and as a performer, as a musician. And just so... so beautiful, so powerful music is, you know, really, I mean, I never have trouble talking about music, even though mm-hmm. I always start a sentence, it's impossible to talk about music. But Brahms is where words stop and the real, you know, real music starts.
This third movement we've been listening to is heavily Hungarian inspired. You can hear the gypsy in it.
Yeah, of course, it was one of the great idioms of the era, and also violin as an instrument, I think, inspires that type of music.
Lively third movement of the violin concerto by Johannes Brahms, the only violin concerto he composed. Did this just totally take it out of him? Or?
I don't know. I mean, it is a major work, and it's long, as you said, mm-hmm. for a concerto, over 35 minutes. And it has just as many beautiful melodies and great musical material as a full symphony, for sure.
The soloist will be Nikki Chewy, who's doing a masterclass this evening. It's from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. It is open to the public. It's a great opportunity. I mean, they've already selected the musicians that are going to be performing with them, but if you have a young musician, it's a great opportunity to get up close and see how they work with people and see how human they are and how, what decent people they are.
Yeah, it's always fun. I always go for an hour or so to listen. And my experience is that no matter if it's the principal tuba player of the New York Philharmonic or the Canadian brass members or a violinist, ultimately, I mean, instrument aside, they give a lot of practical advice of to execute something. But instruments aside, they all talk about the same musical solutions, the same, you know, approach to, you know, do it like you're singing and how you can do that on your own instrument. It's very inspiring for me as well to just listen to these masterclasses.
And that is, as we say, open to the public. That's courtesy of Twickenham Fest, who originally brought Nikki Chewy here to Huntsville. And he's back. How did you meet him?
I met him through my management, actually. Okay. We have the same management, and I've been hearing about his playing for a long time. And as you said, through Twickenham Fest, I also had some great feedback about his playing. So this is just a perfect piece for him.
That's the Violin Concerto, which opens the program. And then in the second half, another big Brahms.
Actually, it's the other way around.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the Violin Concerto is in the second half, and okay. I tell you why. Because Symphony No. 3 we are playing is the strange symphony out of the four, because it ends quietly.
Oh,
you know, it doesn't have a bombastic ending to the last movement. And as I was reading about this symphony again, this is not the first time I conducted, but apparently there is a Romeo and Juliet story to it somehow, and that could be the of course you're always prepared. Is that
well,
on your
I found this long articles on slate.com about how autobiographical this was and about Brahms' great love for Clara Schumann and his love for Robert Schumann, and it was all about love.
I suspect that this slow and beautiful ending has a lot to do with that story, if that's true.
Yeah, you never know. He said that Schumann is present in Brahms' Third Symphony. And he said that, of course, they were great friends. Robert Schumann kind of discovered Brahms and said that he's the next big thing, and he wasn't wrong. And then Robert suffered from mental illness and was locked up in an asylum, and Brahms was in love with Clara. And it says in this article that I found on Slate.com, it said those years of Robert's mentoring, his madness and death, and Brahms' passion for Clara remained in Brahms' mind for the rest of his life. And he said that he was living on the Rhine River, and Robert Schumann's Symphony No. 3 is the Rhenish. And he was sort of quoting that, and he thinks this article writer is thinking that it was the Rhine that the high romantic Robert Schumann chose to jump in his suicide attempt. So for Brahms, the river and the memory of those years were joined. Likely that association of person and place is why the river and his memories around it came out in the symphony. And it begins with Robert's theme, and so with Robert himself. To some degree, this is a work in which, hidden in notes, Brahms looked back at his life.
Yeah, it has nothing to add. I think it's true, you know. The question is... Well, it's always interesting to read about the history or what we think the history is behind a composition as far as the composer's life is concerned. But then the great thing about music and classical music in particular is that it becomes your own story.
Mm.
You know, great music like this becomes all of them. You know, nobody can escape. You'll become, you know, all these pieces at some point going to be part of a movie. I mean, if it's a great tune, it'll be picked up by a movie director, and then, you know, there is a pop culture reference there, or immediately some pictures spring to mind. But other than that, when you come to the concert and listen to it live, it's ultimately your story that comes to life by listening to this music.
Thank you.
Gregory Voigt and I were just discussing off the air about all this research that I do and highlighting, Xeroxing liner notes and reading things online and checking books out of the library. And then I wondered, does it even matter that I do all this work?
I think it does. First of all, it matters to you. I mean, it's your approach. It's your way to get closer, to get more out of your experience as a listener. I think it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, why I love it, this fact that you do research, and I'm sure many other listeners or music lovers do this, because music is related to everything. I mean, music is part of life. Music is life. And when you find your own link to music, like you love horses, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
There is a way to connect beautiful animals and beautiful music, and this way it really becomes yours, and that's what matters in my art form, I think.
Heard the third movement of the Symphony No. 3 in F Major, music of Johannes Brahms, that you can hear performed live this Saturday evening beginning at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. I'm speaking with conductor Gregory Voigt, and since you're here, you can clear up a question for me. This conductor is Hungarian, and I was taught it was Antal Dorati, but if it's pure Hungarian, it's Dorati. Which is it?
It's Dorati.
Antal Dorati. He was conducting the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra. But Gregory Voigt is conducting the Brahms Symphony No. 3 and the Violin Concerto on Saturday. Then on Sunday, it's still Brahms, but a different type of Brahms.
Different type of Brahms, and the serenade. He wrote two serenades. Mm-hmm. He wrote two serenades way before he wrote any of his symphonies. And the famous Haydn variations are also from before the first symphony, which I find very interesting. The story goes that he, had Beethoven's shadow over him, like everybody else back in the days, and there was a lot of pressure on a composer about writing a symphony, because symphony was Beethoven's Symphony 9 first and foremost, and 5 and 3 of course, so it took a long time for him to get into writing a piece that he called symphony. But he wrote his hidden symphonies, both serenades. To me, are very symphonic in nature. Although this Serenade number 1 in D has a 6 movements, so it's not a 4 movement. So it really is like a serenade or like a suite. But the material, the ideas, the development in the music, it's all very symphonic, except that this piece he wrote first as a kind of like a chamber ensemble piece, apparently for 9 players first, and then there was another version for more players. Now, this version is lost Later, Brahms orchestrated himself this serenade for full orchestra, of which orchestration everybody knows. But there are some people who decided to recreate this chamber version. And I find it very interesting. This is what we're going to play, one of the recreations of Serenade Number 1 as a chamber music or chamber ensemble piece for string quintet and woodwind quintet, including the oboe, which is an unusual take on the orchestration, but I like that sound in there. And what I love about this piece is that you kind of learn in, you know, looking through the looking glass and looking at the details of how he works and what his thinking as a composer was and how he creates his music. It's much easier and much more transparent. It's much easier to hear everything that's going on when you have 10 players and not 85 players on stage. So I'm going to talk a little bit about certain things in Brahms's music and how it's pastoral and how we hear Beethoven here and there and what his solutions were for genres like a scherzo versus a minuet and how do you work with a rondo in the finale. And again, as I mentioned it before, the audience gets to sit close to the musicians and hear what actually it sounds like to be on stage, on the stage of the VBC, and how it sounds completely different of what you actually hear when you're sitting in the auditorium. And it'll give you an idea of what a musician's life is like. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to sit there, you hear your colleagues that are sitting closest to you much more clear than the others. Then there is this Gregory Voida guy up there waving his hands, and you have to read your music and look at him at the same time and then listen. And then, you know, the spotlights are on you, and then there are these people sitting. So it's an environment that that you don't even think about it when you're in the audience of how complex it is to actually do this job, being an orchestra musician.
I think this is one of my favorite Brahms pieces. It's just got this big, open air, joyous sound to it.
Yeah, a lot of happiness in there, especially for Brahms. You know, he was having trouble writing music without, you know, clouds flying over or a lot of drama going on. This is a very, very happy piece, especially for Johannes Brahms.
Serenades originally were meant to be played outdoors, sort of as background music for parties, but Brahms, I don't think, had that quite in mind for this particular piece.
No, I think it's called a serenade because he didn't want to call it a symphony, and it has more movements. And also serenade, well, what we do, and we're going to talk about this when we talk about next season, you know, they were played for occasions like dinners and, just get-togethers, also indoors. But it's originated as outdoor music for festivities, of course. But by this time, serenade just became a genre that, that every composer felt like they had to try themselves in.
Listening to a recording by the London Symphony Orchestra, the piece that the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra will be doing the same piece, but it won't sound quite like this.
It won't sound quite like this. It's an arrangement for 10 players, but you do get to sit close to those players, so it's going to be a different experience.
That's the week, the Serenade number one of Johannes Brahms, the only piece on the program for the Sunday afternoon concert.
That's right. Our casual classics are usually around an hour and 15 minutes tops with no break. And there is about one third of talking and two third of playing. Mm-hmm. And as the idea or the casual classics we did last year that we called musical chairs, you know, when you know the game when you have to run around and there's always one less chair. Well, in this case, we're going to do something similar, and I'm going to encourage the audience to change seats in between movements. I'm going to give them some time, and so they can decide where they want to sit and from what angle they want to listen to the music. The chairs where the audience is going to be sitting are going to be placed around the chamber ensemble. Chamber ensemble, if you've ever seen the stage from a little bit closer, you know that there are risers in the back where usually our brass players and wind players sit, and the basses are up on a riser. That's where the audience is going to be sitting, or half of the audience. And then the orchestra is down on stage level. And then around it, kind of like going out downstage, there will be more chairs. So you can sit behind me or halfway, like profile, looking at the orchestra from that angle. And it is part of the experience to kind of like learn about the stage of the VBC and what it sounds like from different spots.
And that will be the last concert of this season.
That is the last concert of this season, and we are ready for the next.
We are. Gregory Voigt and I are holding the new brochure from the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra that says Force of Nature. We're wrapping up our journey now. We're heading to the woods. What is this all about?
No, it's named after me, Force of Nature.